not to threaten it, not to challenge it, right? A spouse, you have a relationship, you have beauty, so that's your asa, and tough is Torah. Very important. That's what we're leading up to. We want to get the Torah, right? Torah is the way God thinks, the blueprint of the world, how God, and we have a relationship with God in that way. So those are all very non-arguable fundamentals of relationship with God. What's the letter I missed? I missed the letter Shin, and Bereshis. So what's the letter, what's Shin stand for? Shtika, quiet. Now, okay. That's a little bit of a more of an interesting one, right? A relationship with God, we need quietness. Now, if you remember from last week, God answers Moshe Rabbeinu when he says, ask the question, why do you give the Torah to Rabbi Akiva? And he asks the question, what zu Torah, zu schora? This is Torah. This is a reward. What does God say? Shtok, quiet. Kach la machshava. This is my thought process. So shtika is a fundamental aspect of relationship with God. Now, sidebar here for 30 seconds. 100%, any relationship, sometimes we just need to be quiet, right? In the relationship, we just need to hear. But I think it's much deeper than that. I think there's an aspect of this, which is, right, which is that when we're quiet, we're not projecting who we are. We're not establishing and stating that we know better, but we're actually listening to the other person. But more importantly, is also there's a lot that's being said in the sound of silence. More is most many times more is said in quiet than being allowed. As my mother used to tell us, don't look at me with that tone, right? There's and I've said this many times to people, they don't recognize, which is that a lot of times we give off a lot about what we're feeling, what we're doing without saying a word. And we have to be careful about that.
Isn't
that
the same word as shepherd when you say shepherd?
Yeah, exact same word. So our relationship is, so now we can look at that story again. And God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu something very powerful. He's saying is that I am answering you quiet so you can hear my thought process. Because words are actually a limiting of understanding. Words don't express the whole, every essence and everything. I hate communicating, especially certain and very important things on email. Because email doesn't give you a tone. Emails, and for sure, if you have to tell someone something or you're trying to convince them of something, well, you got to see what they're doing. You got to see the body language and everything. So in the relationship, this concept of shtika screams loudly. The concept of it's not just because of yourself, like it's get it out of, you let people talk, which is true. That's very important. It's more important is that start hearing the silence. You'll pick up so much more. Every book you read about all these people's success, they all seem to have one, not one, I'm not saying only one, but definitely this in common, is that the smart people in the room always tend to talk less. They're listening the more. You know, they're, and I don't believe they're only listening to the words that are being said. I believe that they are listening to what's not being said. Right? And people come to you and people have a communication with you. Most of the time, you really hear who they are. This is fascinating. I came across this. I think, you know, God sends me these little snippets, especially when I'm like thinking about things. I came across, I happen to like this guy. His name is Jordan Peterson. I don't know if you ever heard of him, Dr. Jordan Peterson. He's, very fascinating, very interesting. He wrote a book, The 12 Rules of Life. It's 12 Rules of Life. Yeah. He said something he said, how do you know someone's being authentic or being, you know, authentic or being fake? And he said, he's a teacher, he's a professor, and he said something. He said, when I have graduates that are in my class and they write cliches, it frustrates me so much. And he says that, like, So why? Because a cliche is exactly that. It's a cliche. It's not your own thought. Now, the reason why people use cliches, the reason why people argue not their own thoughts, and we're influenced by a lot out there, is because if I put out the thought process of the world, someone disagrees with me, okay. It's not me. But when I lay out who I am, very vulnerable, in a very vulnerable position, it's true. But at least it's authentic. It's who I am. The thought process that he says, a little flower that pops out in the middle of the essay, which I go, oh, that's the piece. That's you talking. Now, that's a vulnerable place to be, because if I disagree with that point, then I'm truly disagreeing with you. And by the way, that's sometimes okay. But the reality is most of our talking points are not our own personal talking points. They're what we heard, we read, you know. And he says, here's a very easy litmus test to know that, right? How do you argue with a person? If it's your own point, you can be very comfortable with the argument. It doesn't mean you're not making yourself vulnerable. It is, because it's you. But if it's you, but many times the arguments are they're so strong because you have to promote something that's not you. Right? I'll give an example of this, two examples of this that happened recently. There was an email that went out about a softball game, softball league, the Jewish softball league here in town. And it was the person who wrote it had a point that he wanted to make, but he filled up the beginning part of his argument with cliches, literally. You know, Orthodox Jews believe that a woman is unkosher on the baseball field. Literally, he wrote that. I'm like, that's not what we believe. So he lost the argument right off the bat because I was like, what are you talking about? That's not the conversation. But let me tell you a story. This is a fascinating story that happened with me, which really highlights this concept. Do you understand the concept like that a person, like, when he's saying what's his, I just want to point this out, this Rabbi Kiva's students were smart people. They probably had their own ideas and concepts, but they didn't respect each other. So the part of it that maybe they missed in my terms is that this is me. When I promote an idea that I thought through and everything, and you dismiss it, that's not respect. Now you could argue. The Talmud even says that Tamil Chachamim, they sharpen their swords against each other, and they attack, and they fight, but they walk out hand in hand. They walk in out arm in arm. There's nothing wrong with disagreeing, even with who I am. We all have different perspectives. It's actually much more refreshing to argue with someone about something real than versus all the cliches that you always have to answer up, right? And I was up in Boulder. I used to teach up in Boulder for many years. I did QF up in Boulder for like four to six years. And thank God I had some success there. And one of the things we did, which is surprising for Boulder actually, is we did a Shechita class. We had a class of teaching how to do Shechita, ritual slaughter. And we had a group of people, and many of them were people that I studied with, I knew and everything, but there were a few people that added on, never met them before. Not that I had a problem with that, I just didn't know them. And there was one person there, and we were in the middle of what's called malicha. Malicha means salting, where you have to salt the chicken. So the easiest way to defeather a chicken, I learned that then, is to put it in hot water. All the feathers come off very easily. Once dead, obviously. Now, just clarify. Yeah. Right? You take off. We don't do that as Orthodox Jews because we believe that you can't cook the blood in the chicken. So we have to extract the blood out of the chicken right? And then we could start adding heat to it. You actually could grill a chicken straight without doing malicha, the halacha states, but you're only boiling. Like you put on a grill, that's fine. Because again,
what's the point of that? You're burning the feathers.
No, you always take off the feathers.
Oh, okay.
So the problem is, we had a few chickens. So this for the understanding of it. So we're sitting there having to pluck chickens wings because that's the way to do it. Now they have machines. Or skin like I did. I took off all the skin. But there's no other real good way for Orthodox Jews to feather the chicken. I mean, they have these machines that do it in these big coming because you can't use the hot water method, which is a very much easier method. You have to do malicha. I mean, you can't just drain the blood. You have to salt it. And you can't salt it with the feathers. There's a whole kind.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're basically doing that. And we're like, so basically I'm skinning my chicken because I'm not doing feathers. That's just not who I am. So I'm just like pulling off the skin and calling it a win. So we, this person was there who I didn't know before. He wasn't part of my group, but he was there. He turns to me and he says, Rabbi, are you one of those people who believe that Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis is literal? And I'm like, my response was, it's like, why would we, if we didn't believe that something's literal, why would we be sitting here plucking chickens? Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but it's a legitimate question.
It's a legitimate question in a non-legitimate place. And I'll explain to you why in a second.
Okay.
And so he then literally goes, F you and F Moshe Rabbein. Well, then I say, excuse me. That's completely inappropriate, right? It's inappropriate. I don't know who you are. You came to my class, right? And you're asking questions. And he said, well, it was a confrontational question too. He said, I'm sitting with my hand up a chicken and you're asking me philosophical questions about Bereishis being literal. That's not, it's out of context and inappropriate. It's also inappropriate in the terms of, so I was very strong with him. And he said, well, you told me that you don't belong. I said, I never said that. He said, yeah, you said, why are you doing Shechita? I said, no, I didn't say why you're doing Shechita, why you are the one doing Shechita. I said, why would you be doing Shechita? Why would you be doing this whole process? So he explained himself afterwards. I said, but this is inappropriate. It's inappropriate time to have this conversation. You want to have the conversation? I'm happy to have the conversation. We can sit down and have a conversation about it, which he did. A week or two later, he came to King Supers and we spent 4 hours and there were a lot of cliches and a lot of screaming on his part, a lot of jumping up and down, a lot of accusations. And I finally, after 4 hours, I said, look, I love this stuff. I could go on for another 4 hours. But I just want to point out something to you. In all this time, right, I've not raised my voice once with you cursing me, accusing me of being a caveman, accusing me that I'm backwards, accusing me of like that I don't know what I'm talking about, everything. You've screamed, you jumped, you've been up and down like everything. Said, you're single, don't have your life together. Thank God I'm married with a beautiful family, right? So we could do this for another 4 hours, but you're going to have to ask yourself at some point the question, which is, do you want to be happy? Do you want to know who you are? Or do you want to get sucked into all this drama and all this stuff? And thank God, I think he actually heard me. I don't know if he's religious or not. It doesn't matter to me, honestly. But he got married a year later to a very nice girl. And he started, and it was like, and the point I was making is this exact point. It's like, if you are true to your understanding of what you are, the realities of the world, if you listen to the way someone just described to me, many of us live in our own echo chambers. So everything we know and everything we decide is all because we're bouncing around the same four people that we know agree with us. versus if we listen to like the silence of the rest of the world, if we ever like pull ourselves out of that and we listen to what's not being said, right? Versus the arguments that we want to make and we have to scream loud about it, right? We might find ourselves realizing that, wait, some of this stuff is not even who I am. Some of the stuff that we get offended by doesn't really truly offend us, but we just feel like we need to be offended by it versus having a proper conversation. And in argument, and I think there's a very important point in this, that Derech Eretz matters a lot. Respect for one another matters a lot. My fright for America at this moment is this point. Many people are not willing to even have a proper conversation. They automatically fall back. I said the same exact share class I gave after Obama was elected and Trump was elected. Nothing to do with politics. I said, it's like, we're going to keep flipping back and forth because everyone wants the rhetoric. Everyone wants to be louder. Everyone wants to hear the point versus like sitting down and saying a conversation about what's matter. I asked this, so I sit with like a whole group of people one time and I said, doesn't it bother you that I know before even talking to you, because I know them well enough, I know where you stand on almost every important position, or every important conversation. I know where you stand. That's you then? This is not a political conversation about left, right, right, left. It's a conversation about who am I? And things are challenging. And, you know, but everything has to be like so far. Like it has to be like oversimplified and over like, okay, you must hold this, no, we don't. The beauty of halacha, the beauty of Torah is it's not simple. And there are going to be situations where policy dictates one way and completely policy dictates this another way. I remember talking to a whole bunch of people when I first moved here. And I, you know, they were new to religious Judaism. And a lot of them would ask a question. One person would ask the question and they would discuss amongst each other and they would be like, okay, this is what we have to be done. And I said, I want to just point out something. None of you would ever, right, be like, you know, at someone's house, right? And, you know, you're like, oh, I got a pain here. So, oh, you know, I have heart medicine. You want to go take it? Might as well share it. Halacha is true that way also. There are nuances that don't allow it to be that we just get to share all the halacha. Now, there's some obvious things that are easy, but we're not talking about obvious things. We're talking about, you know, important things, right? So nuances are there. And if we don't allow the conversation to happen, we lose all of that. And the nuance, I think what I'm trying to say is that the silence is the nuance, right? I remember being in awe of a great rabbi when I asked him a halachic shaila, and his response was, how would your wife react to this? I was newly married. I was like, wait, that doesn't make sense. Torah is black and white. What was my wife's emotional reaction? It's not black and white. And that's the beauty of it. But if we don't pick up on those, on the silence, when we don't pick on the people hurting, you know, even or maybe especially when people come in and attack us, it's more not what they're saying, it's what they're not saying, right? Which happens sometimes. I remember my wife had a person walk into the house. This person is a normal, regular person, and she literally screamed at my wife for 45 minutes for giving a bad name for mothers because she's so capable. So capable. My wife is so capable. She's giving you make us all feel like we have to do more and all that stuff, right? My wife is extremely capable, thank God. But she's like, that's not, and my wife was like, was shocked. And she's like, and I told my wife afterwards, she's like, what she said is one thing. What she's saying, the other thing is that she's like, I'm falling apart here.
It's like a backwards comment.
Yeah, it's a backwards comment, but it's more important. She's crying. She's asking for help, understanding and help. So we can get all insulted by the accusation and everything. And it's not, I'm not saying it's not, I'm not saying it's easy not to fall into that trap when a person comes and attacks you. Or we could hear the silence and hear that this person's hurting and we could help them. And that's respect. It doesn't, respect does not mean that we have to, we line up our respect for one another based on how we each other treat each other. Respect is that there are different people. This is a beautiful thing about Sfiras Omer, which people, I don't know if everyone recognizes, realizes. Sfiras Omer has every single day a different sphere, right? That's what's called Netzach, Netzach, hold a hold. You know what that is? That's 49 days of saying that there are different colors in the world. There are different personalities. Man, get a chesed for chesed, you know, some hippie 60s kindness of kindness with gvura gvura. And let's mish and see what happens. So our interactions, our respect has to be respect, not just for the people that we recognize as being similar to us. That's great. Those are the easy ones to respect. It's easy. Our respect has to happen to people that are different than us, different colors of us. They look different. They seem different. They act different. And that's the, you know, that's our avoda. So now we're starting to recognize that, you know, even though we talked in extremes about like, you know, happiness and like baseline happiness and being baseline, even in real pain, saying Hashem Echad, but we have the tools. We're given the tools every year to recognize that. We're given the tools of a lesson of quiet, a lesson of respect, a lesson of the Omer, literally, of counting each day, to make each day count. I know that's a cliche. That's a great one. If you put it together with the concept of, like, hey, there are different days, different personalities. There's different realities. Respect is to understand their perspective. I have to start introducing, I'm a very curious person. I really am. I've always been very curious about things. And sometimes I have to navigate as a rabbi. I have to be very careful. I have to navigate asking people questions about topics and policy. Like, these things, I have a few people that I'm very comfortable with to do that, because they automatically assume, well, you're Orthodox rabbi, so therefore, yeah, of course, you're on this side of the conversation. I'm like, I'm on either side at this point. I just want to understand the conversation. That's the conversation that we should have, right? And, like, I have my opinions, of course, but my opinions are going to be surprising to a lot of people, if you're willing to have the conversation. So that's what we're talking about here. So if we could do that, if we could do the Derech Eretz Kamala Torah, right? Which is the conversation and understanding, recognizing when we're speaking ourself, our truth, versus this parodying or getting frustrated, offended by things that maybe are not even our own pieces. And so if we're arguing and we have to argue with conviction or with attitude or with name calling or with, you lost. It's not you. So back off, and we all do this. How many times, what's the line? Oh my gosh. Oh, every man will perjure himself for the sake of saving faith. We know when the, how many times we all have this. We had a conversation. We know we're probably at this point have probably missed something or went wrong, but it doesn't matter. We're too tied in, right? But why? It's sometimes not even our conversation to be had. And we take it so, right? So the answer is because we haven't done the, we haven't given the respect to ourselves to truly express who we are. And I get it. The world out there is completely opposite. The world out there is that you know, walk a mantra, you know, scream out that I believe this, this, and this, because that will get me elected, you know, or that will get me in the front of the class or the head of the class or excitement versus who am I? But believe it or not, in Judaism, quiet actually wins. I think I said this, when I ask questions to Rabbi Summers, the Rosh Kollel Rabbi Summers, you know, I'm more excited when he doesn't answer my questions. Then I know I have a good question. And he's like, you know, we just literally yesterday we were talking about something, and I was a little bit like unsure about like, and I basically I just it was a voice note. We were going back and forth, voice note. I said, you know, I just wanted to know I'm uncomfortable. I'm not trying to argue here, like, because sometimes I'm trying to understand sounds like you're arguing with the person, but you're not. I'm not trying to argue with your point. I'm not understanding this point. And his response was, me neither. Let's go figure it out. Right, let's go find out. Right? That's great. That's wonderful. The reason why, if he gives me an answer, it's not as compelling is because most of us, when we ask our questions, the more we direct the answer. So when he gives me an answer, it's usually I'm like, wait a second, I probably did it again. I probably told him what I want, you know, what the answer to be, which is true. Because by the way, that's if the person is asking the question that way, there's no other answer anyways. But if you get to a question that you don't have the answer to, right? This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Then you could start actually opening up. And your brain could open up, and you'll be so shocked that there are answers out there, and they come. It's not that we never get the answer; it's just I've gotten to a point where I'm willing to ask the question, a real question, and therefore I have the answer. You know, it happens all the time, where when you finally let go of how smart you think your question is, or how smart you think the direction you're going to. You open up yourself to another perspective and you'll suddenly wait a second. That's actually great. As simple as saying, hey, why don't you sit in the middle? You know, that's great. You know, that it doesn't have to be this mind blowing, you know, nirvana. But you pick up so much and everything. And that's the Omer. The word Omer is the same gematria, the same numerical value. I don't know if you're familiar with gematrias, but gematrias are basically each letter has their numerical value. So the Omer is the same gematria as tahar mitame, become pure from the impurity. What impurity are we talking about? We're talking about impurities of all the preconceived notions that we put in our brains, all the garbage that we've decided is us when it really isn't. And we've defended to almost our death things that, again, not that it don't matter to you, because you do, because you decided to engage that point. But it's not automatically that it's an expression of you versus an expression of that's what the world's saying and that's what it is and that's the influence and everything. What power is there if you have a statement of that this is me, this is who I am? I'll tell you a story. It's not in my notes, but it's a worthwhile story. I do veer off sometimes. But it was an eye-opening to me. I was asked to speak with, I was invited to college, to DU, to the psychology, to the class in psychology to speak to them. And it was interesting. It was me and three other Jews.
Speak it out.
I'll tell you in a second. And it was me. I was clearly religious. The other three were not as clearly religious, but clearly Jewish. And our topic of discussion is that what would you like to share with the upcoming class about how they should, you know, interact with Orthodox Judaism? They have an Orthodox Jewish client, right? What would you like them to know about that and everything? So what I said, doesn't really matter. I mean, it was for the story, but it was interesting. But everyone else spoke about how they felt tremendous anti-Semitism. They felt, you know, in their life growing up anti-Semitism. And I sit there and said, look, I mean, this is a perfect place to analyze this. I mean, a bunch of room of, you know, psychologists. I said, it's so funny. I grew up the most Orthodox looking of the group. And I grew up in Los Angeles, three blocks away from Merrill's. You know, my mom used to bug me about wearing tzitzis out. I said, Mom, I'm not wearing a from Merrill's. Merrill's in Los Angeles. Merrill's is a very, like, punk street, like a lot of tattoos and mohawks. And my mom is like, bug me that my tits is wet. I'm like, Ma, I said, I'm not wearing a purple mohawk. I don't have a piercing in my nose. I mean, like, this should be the worst of the problems with me, you know? So, right. But the fact that I was always outwardly Orthodox, like, it's not to mean that no one asked to tell me, you know, F you, Jew. It didn't matter. Like I was comfortable who I was. So I never felt anti-Semitism. I'm not blind. I had stories I could tell different times, but, you know, I'm not saying that there's never anti-Semitism. I'm saying they felt it so much more. And I said, maybe because you were uncomfortable saying you're a Jew. Right? You kind of are not out there as a Jew. Right? And I don't know. I mean, that's my speculation. I'm just saying, but, like, to me, that was like, I feel this is a very important piece. If you are who you are, these things don't bother you as much. It really, like, you know, again, I'm not talking about the security aspect of it, and I'm not talking about the safety aspect, which should be a concern. But in my life, about how it affects me as me, you know. So if we get out, if we create this nice eye, this, like, this beautiful, you know, who am I, by getting rid of all the impurities of our own thought process, then what happens is a great story. Another example of turning on a podcast and hearing something that works. There's a great story from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There was a person that wrote a letter to Lubavitcher Rebbe. And in the letter he wrote, I am so depressed. I am so broken. I am so down. I've built a business and it means nothing to me. I have created a family and it means nothing to me. I have done so much in my life and it just doesn't mean anything to me. I have, and continues on and on. The Rebbe did not respond with a word. Sent back the letter and circled all the I's in the letter. And his message to this person was nothing will bring you satisfaction because it's all about I. I did this, I did this, I did that. If you opened yourself up to that, it's not only I, it's other people. This write a paper and pen, to write a letter has how many people involved to make the paper, how many people in pencil. If the whole is the I, it's very hard to find happiness. If the I is, I'm somebody who could interact with other people, I respect other people, I engage respectfully to one another, so then you'll find happiness. It's very powerful. And this is, again, this is Derek Eretz Kamla Torah. If I'm not always trying to project who I am onto people and make things happen the way I believe they should happen, but I say, you know what? I have my truth. I have my convictions, and those are strong. But I respect your perspective. You respect my perspective, my true perspective. And then I've opened up my eye to more. So I've opened up my eye to family. I opened my eye to siblings. I opened up my eye to community. You almost always will find happiness. And that was less the Rebbe. So we have a situation here, which is very fascinating. I'm going to keep track of the time because I was in big trouble last time. For going over. I'll end with a story because we'll do this next week, this last part. But to me, there's a very powerful story. I get very emotional when they say the story. I'll try not to, but it's a very powerful story of this concept of respect, even when it might be against us. Might we think? There was a girl, you know, who is in the waiting room of a school, Lakewood, New Jersey. I don't know if you understand the numbers in Lakewood, New Jersey, but in Lakewood, New Jersey, I think at one point they need to add another class, like on a weekly basis. It's like 60 kids born a week in Lakewood. So, like, it's more, right? So, like, it's, you know, so I think it's like once a month. Yeah. No, once a month, I think they have to add class because some of them are from, yeah. But, so this lady, this principal's interviewing this young woman, and there's actually another person in the waiting room. who's already married and has a child, and she's single, right? And they're both in the, and they're both obviously going for the same job. There's one job opening, and she's still talking. They know each other, and she mentions the lady that's married. Says, "Oh, this would be so great if I could get this job. I really could use it to help support my family. You know, my mom, you know." And the single woman's there, and they both interview, and there's two ways this could have gone about. The single woman's like, "Oh, it's so nice of you, like, to put that on me. I'm here sitting here single, but you have a beautiful family, and you want me to give up my job, you know, you like, you know." But that's, thank God, that's not the way she thought. She's like, she takes the interview. She gets a phone call from the principal, and the principal says, "I want to offer you a job." And the woman says, "I have a question for you. Between me and this other woman, were we equally qualified? Right? You know, was it close?" And she said, "Actually, it was really quite close. And I, you know, it was a really, the decision was quite hard. You know, it wasn't a simple decision. I said, would you have an issue if I allow her to take the job? I think she needs it more." Okay, so let's think about it. Let's take, you know, what's mine versus, and the principal said, "No, not at all." What? Okay, that could be the end of the story. It's not. The principal is so unbelievably impressed with this girl. She wants her for her son. So she calls up a chaplain and says, "This is the girl I want for my son." So the daughter-in-law of a principal always gets a job. So that's, you know, we think sometimes of like, oh, it's, we could get into this rut of like, oh, it's, no, it's respect for one another. Can I, you know, it's equal. That's the lesson of, I believe, of Omer. That's,
I missed that last part.
Yeah.
She wasn't the daughter-in-law yet.
She got engaged.
So you're saying that was,
that's the reward. Well, the reward came out. She got engaged and she was, what's it called? She ended up getting the job, a different job, because she's the daughter. So, what?
Not a girl.
She was a girl now. Now she's a woman.
She wasn't a girl.
It's funny you say that, because I literally asked, one second, let me pause. So, but I literally asked my wife that question. If she's a girl, she said a young woman or a girl?
If she's menstruating, she's a girl.
Okay. You'll have to argue that out with my wife.